Warning: the following program contains adult language, adult themes, and spoilers. Viewer discretion is advised. Welcome to this week's episode of This Week's Episode. I am your host, Evan Goldstein. With me, as always, is the psycho historian, Andy Furnott.
Well, I don't know what you're going to have for dinner, if that's what you're asking.
Gifted mathematician, Karen Randazzo.
In the wrong hands, math is a weapon.
And short-tempered emperor, Chris Randazzo.
Hey, is that Star Trek Deep Space Nine's Dr. Bashir?
We here on this week's episode talk television. This is episode 272. It was my choice this week. I chose Foundation, season one, episode one, The Emperor's Peace. Now, I was going to give, like, this is for the week of and or the month of, but did we record one already in December? I feel like we did.
Yeah, it was our... We did. It was our makeup from November.
Okay. So this
one's actually on schedule.
Okay. So this is your December episode of this week's episode. Welcome, everybody. But let's set aside that for a second. If you want to get in touch with us, just email. Snail mail. There's a post office box somewhere that we can get it from. But if you want to let us know that you're listening, email us at, mail at geekaid.com.
This has been going on for way too long.
Wow. Totally blanked.
Struggle bussin'.
Just in the subject line, right up, it's for us here at this week's episode. I don't care what you write, just write something, because I don't think I've ever read one of our emails. I feel like I should, but I don't.
It's called slacking at its finest.
It is. I mean, someone said that on the Discord. I'm like, oh shit, that's right. We do have a Discord. Ha. So
wait, you know, I got to tell you, I checked our Discord. No one commented on anything after our last episode. So I'm disappointed, y'all. You're supposed to say things to me. Give me stuff to talk about. I will pay attention to you.
Yeah, that's true. She will. Hey, gang, how's it going?
Well, it's 4 days before Christmas and I'm a mom. So
hey,
you tell me.
You're a mom.
Everything's running perfect, right?
Congratulations.
Oh,
smooth
yeah.
as silk. Fine Swiss watch.
our second grade daughter's class holiday party is tomorrow, and the other class I'm one of the class parents.
Okay.
The other class parent is unavailable, so Chris is stepping in.
Okay.
So, I am indeed. I'm filling in. I'm going to be reading How the Grinch Stole Christmas to the class, and then doing whatever the hell Karen tells me to do.
Sounds like a good plan.
Will you be in costume?
No.
He has a Christmas sweatshirt, and I may give him some, like, headband bobbers to
Got
wear.
Got it. The, like, the googly eyes of the Christmas season. I get you. Yeah, I for the holiday season, I went and, you know, nefariously gathered every Christmas cartoon that I could possibly find, and there were a couple of interesting ones. Does anybody here remember Nestor, the Christmas donkey, the long-eared Christmas donkey?
Vaguely?
Yeah. I read, like, the intro about that, and it was really dark. I forgot how dark some cartoons were in the 70s. But, you know, it's that time of the season, you know, Frosty and Rudolph and Claymation and, you know, smaller animals picking on other animals. That's how we celebrate the holidays, right?
Sure.
I think those are stop motion. I don't know that they're actually made of clay. I don't think they are.
Okay. All right. I haven't watched them in a very long time, but I, yes. So Rudolph is flock,
says Chris.
I think, yes, you are correct, sir.
Okay. But this is like one of those moments where, like, it's a very duh moment, but I was today years old when I thought about the fact that not all claymation is actually clay. Because stop motion
is completely different.
Yeah. Let me rephrase that. Not all stop motion is claymation.
But all claymation is stop motion.
And it's stop motion. Yes. Oh, no. God, no. My brain can't handle this.
We've reached claymation inception.
Clayception.
There it is. Write that down. Clayception.
Name your sex tape. Okay.
I love your sex tape. I hadn't thought about that in a while, and then Andre Brower died. And I got very sad.
Yeah, that was so sad.
I heard a rumor somewhere. Okay, sorry. Anyway, that.
Okay, Allison.
Ah, if only. Don't slam. Never mind. Anyway, my thinking is that if we were to do this thing that once existed called the Pedathon, if we were to bring that back, I would do a portrait of him for Charta to auction off. I think someone should definitely buy a beautiful portrait of Andre Brower. And I think, personally, that there should be an element of someone else in that photo, potentially in a very romantic embrace.
Okay. I'm uncomfortable with where this conversation is going because, you know, I want to have happy thoughts, but...
Well, it is happy thoughts. I'm picturing you in your moon night that Chris Campana gave you.
Okay. All right. Now I see
just a little dip. Listen, who doesn't want to be dipped by that man in every way, shape, and form?
You know, it was...
That's what she said.
I enjoyed the hell out of that
she
show.
She did.
And when I saw that he passed, I was like, that's sad. And then when I showed you the news, your reaction was, it hit you harder than I expected it to.
Yes, I know.
And a couple of days later when, you know, the internet catches up and, you know, all of the memes and the videos all start coming out, there was, I can't remember what episode it was, but I feel like it was really late where he's saying goodbye. And, you know, they're across from each other at the desk. And, like, I was nearly in tears watching this because he said, name of your sex tape. Did I do that right? And I was like, oh, he's trying so hard.
Yes, except he didn't say name of your sex tape. He said name of your sex movie. Did I do that right?
There it is. Yes, he will be missed. So,
yeah, I didn't expect to be hit so hard, to be honest, because, like, I don't typically get attached to celebrities in that way. And I think there was just something about the character Ray Holt that I really loved and appreciated. And I don't know, like, he, I think, was the thing that carried me through all the seasons of that show, if I'm being honest. Mm. Like, I love the other characters. I really do. I enjoy so many elements of that show, and I could do a rewatch anytime. But I don't know, man, that was such an iconic character. And I think, like, just like what he represented in that show beyond just the character that he played, I can't really name another television show character that I've ever been so enamored with. Like, honestly,
In my head, I still hear him yelling out "hot damn."
Yeah.
I can mm-hmm. like when someone shows a picture and they say you can't hear a picture, like that's what plays in my head. And, you know, we didn't mention it, you know, the last time we recorded, I'm pretty sure it had happened, but, you know, Chandler from Friends, I can't remember
Matthew
his name.
Perry.
Matthew Perry passed.
Yeah.
And, like, that is a shame as well. Like, I had a real rough go of things, but, like, that hit me the same way. I was like, oh, that's sad. And then as all of the in memoriam stuff starts coming out, it just, like, I've watched Friends a lot. Mm-hmm. He was a character that entertained me consistently. And it's a shame that they are gone and that, you know, other things can't come out of it. It you know, when he passed, I started watching the weird remake of The Odd Couple, and I was like, yeah, no, this is I should just stick with Friends. Like,
yeah, you tried.
We're good. Like,
I did Studio 60, which was a blast.
Yeah, yeah, that
he's so good in that. You know, for all that show's flaws, he is consistently he's able to, it's a much more three-dimensional role than Chandler, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was so much less of a direct comedy. Nothing that against Chandler. I adore that role, and I love Friends, but and the show's nice and short. It was a real blast to rewatch that.
Yeah, I had never seen the Odd Couple show, so I was curious because I watched the original and Tom Lennon was in it, and I was like, "Oh, this should be good." And no, it was just really poorly written.
It should be good.
It
yes.
should be good, but
definitely
it
should.
It was not.
Leave us not forget Andre Brower as Frank Pembleton on Homicide: Life on the Streets. That's where I first knew him from. And if you've never seen that show, it's a really impressive police procedural. So I highly recommend going back to that to honor the work of Andre Brower.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you.
It's also totally not the same cop as Ray Holt.
Are you sure?
Very, very different character.
It's fine. I'll just always relate to Jake and his daddy issues.
There it is.
Cool.
So before we jump into what we've all independently been watching, I want to make a comment, seeing as it is the holiday season. Miss Karen, you asked me to acquire something. I did not know this existed, so I'm so happy that you brought it to my attention. It is not television, but it is definitely worth watching because it is on Apple TV or Apple Plus.
It's a special, technically.
Yeah, like, how did this come? How did you find out about this?
A friend of mine is a huge fan of hers, and okay. She was constantly posting videos from it in her Instagram stories.
Okay, so what I'm referencing is...
I haven't gotten a chance to watch it. I've just seen the clips that my friend posted.
And I've only seen the trailer. So it's Hannah Waddington, Home for Christmas.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Okay, like, I was floored by the trailer. Okay.
Yes.
It looks like so much fun, and I hope this takes over the horridness that is Mariah Carey. I want a
grudge, sir.
I want her out, and I want Hannah in, and this could do it. I feel that this is in the right direction, but it looks like a lot of fun. It's definitely gonna. It's. I feel like once we watch this, it's going to be a consistent holiday kind of visitation.
So at the risk
of... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, at the risk of hearing a tangent I don't necessarily care that much about, why are you so opposed to Mariah Carey? Like, what is this hatred?
I feel that she is a one-trick pony that has been... And that has... That like that pony rode away a long time ago.
Hot take.
So, and I can only listen to, I don't know notes. So once they start hitting, you know, like dolphin level, it's not music to me anymore. And that's what her git is.
Once they start hitting dolphin level. Level performance.
When she starts communicating.
Like, you know that hiss when you turn on an old CRT TV?
Yeah.
That's Mariah Carey.
It's not even the hit. Like, you feel it in your head. I don't know if it's audible, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. All I'm saying is, you know, that song is great, but Toad singing it is really... the definitive version.
There are so many other versions that should be playing in the malls constantly, but I feel
it should be the Toad version because that's the definitive version.
So, yes.
Thank you for unpacking that. I can't get that time of my life back, but I'm glad I know.
You're the one who asked.
Yeah, I did.
You set that one up. But yeah, Karen, thank you. This looks like so much fun seeing all of the random cast members from Ted Lasso showing up, and I don't know why Luke Evans is going to be in it at some point in time, but hey, I'm on board. Let's go.
Also, can we just comment on, is there nothing this woman cannot do? Like, seriously?
No. There is not. She is so talented, so brilliant, and if I may say, so freaking gorgeous.
I know. Oh my God, I'm kind of obsessed.
All right. So, with that being said, what have we been watching? Who's going first? Don't all fight once. Ready?
I'll do it.
Yeah, go.
All right. Sacrificial lamb. So,
I know what you've been watching.
Speaking of sacrifice, I have been sacrificing my time to Anne Rice and the Mayfair Witches. The end. No. So I think I had commented that I was starting this, or maybe I hadn't. I don't know. It's been kind of a wild ride. The main character, like, she's a neurosurgeon, and she's been, like, kind of weirdly detached. And then in the episode I was watching today, I think I'm on episode 5 or 6 now. I think it's episode 6. She had, like, this pseudo temper tantrum meltdown, and she's like, he's in my head, oh my god, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's great. What is this acting? Is this acting? What this looks like?
Oh no.
Like, are we sure about this? This was a choice that you made and then followed through on. We kept that cut? Okay. So it's just like really odd, but overall, like, there's feels so shallow. There is a character named Lasher. Lasher is supposed to be what's the male version of a seductress? A seducer.
Okay.
He's supposed to be sexy
it's
times.
It's Evan Goldstein.
Well, hey-o. Listen.
Thank you.
Yeah, and his calves making a guest appearance.
In my dreams.
In my bed.
God, oh, it's not a guest appearance.
Okay.
They live
now.
There.
Stop it.
So, yeah, they wish they had Evan on this show, because let me tell you, this guy, not sexy.
So, remember we were, when I said he's the wish version of someone, and I just couldn't place it. I figured that, as of right now, I'm going to go with he's the wish version of Crowley.
Crowley?
Yeah, because of the demoness, and he's trying to be smooth.
Mark Shepard? You think he is the Mark Shepard of that show? Listen, Mark Shepard has charisma coming out his asshole.
That's why I say wish version.
Oh my god.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to go with.
Fine.
For now.
Sure.
Until I find a better one.
So this guy is so bad. I think in real life, he's probably not this terrible, but they made him grow his hair out because I guess that was supposed to be sexy. Like, I feel like the person who made this character was like,
stubble. That's sexy. Stubble.
Yeah. It was like, I don't know. It was like the Todd McFarlane of like making a man. I don't know how else to put this. Like, it was like, kids love chains, right? Like, girls love stubble, right? Yeah. I've got a niece. She likes men, I think. Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea how they came up with this entire concept for this dude, but basically, the premise of this show is that a woman who is a neurosurgeon finds out that she is a witch, and then she ends up like reconnecting with her family because mothers, plural, die. Yep, not going any further than that. And then this fucking dude, Lasher, is like attached to the family, and he's some sort of like creature demon thing we don't really know. And the fifth episode really just threw me for a loop, because at the end of the fourth episode, this lady like starts a fire in the house and tries to trap the main character in this dining room to kill her, because she's crazy. And in the fifth episode, all of a sudden, the main character and this guy who's been trying to like help her are in the house, and they're repeating this like routine of like, oh, sexy time, oh, breakfast in bed, I'll go make you breakfast, and let me come back up, and then okay. And the way that they filmed it was great. Like, the first 5 minutes of the episode, like the cold open, beautifully done, because he's like, it's the same thing 3 times in a row, but by the 3rd time, he's like staggering up the stairs and he's walking through this dining room, and it's the dining room where the fire was. But in the first 2 versions, the first 2 cuts of him doing this, they just framed it so that he's walking through a doorway where you can't see the burn marks, and they zoomed out just a little bit, and all of a sudden you can see the burn marks on the wall. So it was like just really well hidden and wonderful storytelling. But then they go further through the episode, and I was like, these were choices that they made to tell this story. And it just, I don't know, it's really weird. Like, I don't know what's wrong with witch shows, but I don't tend to like them, I think. I really do. Like, and it's Anne Rice, so I was like, let's go. This can't be that bad. I'm not sure what's going on here. But I'm sticking with it, like I usually do with the witch shows.
hate watch it through and through.
But the thing is, like, there's a part of me that is curious, and I'm not, like, I don't fully hate it. There's just choices that are being made creatively that I don't always understand why they're doing them. Some of the, like, world building is, I don't know, it doesn't feel fully fleshed out, and I think that that's supposed to be, like, mystery, but it just, instead of feeling mysterious, sometimes just feels generic or, like, just not well told. But I'm curious. Like, there is a level of, like, some intrigue here as to what's going to happen and where the story's going. And I'm going to keep moving through it. I just was so surprised because that fifth episode started so strong and it did not end well, like, at all. Like, it just didn't, by the time it got to, like, the second half of the episode, I was like, all right, can we move along? Until the very end, there was a scene where Evan was actually in the room for this, and a woman who's, like, removing a curse on somebody reaches into, she basically can transfer someone else's injury or wound into herself and heal the other person. And so it was a magical wound that this person had, and it was like a stab wound in his side. She transfers it to herself and then reaches inside and pulls out a whole ass knife, but like a long knife, like
magical.
Yeah. It was such a cool special effect that I really appreciated that. Like, that was a very cool way to show how that magic works, and I loved that. So there are little things here and there that I think they're doing a good job of, but
I will say that I feel like in that sort of mythology that they're like considered sin eaters, and that was a really unique way to show that transference of injury, like they did it with the Green Mile. That was another awesome way to show it. Like, that's a trope that happens quite often, but not done very well. And I will admit that in this steaming pile of show, that was done really well.
Yeah. So I would say overall, I'm going to keep going on it, and it's no Blue Eye Samurai, but I'll allow it. Yeah,
we're getting a season two. So
I know.
Yeah. Yay.
That show.
Awesome. All right. Miss Karen?
Hi.
What do you got?
I watched the final season of The Crown. Anybody who doesn't care about British royalty can just tune out for a few minutes.
Cool. See you in a bit.
No, Chris.
I wanted to hear the microphone fall down.
The timeline for that season is the days leading up to, or the events leading up to Diana's death, and the aftermath, and, you know, events that happened after, in not just the aftermath of her death, but things that happened after that that were not related to it, and ending with the Queen's not the Jubilee. Her Jubilee was like her 50th anniversary of being queen.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ended actually with Charles and Camilla's wedding, which was like in early 2000s. Okay. So still quite a lot of her life left, but I get why they ended it where they did. I think the last time I talked about The Crown, I had the same feeling, and it's still true, that it was very interesting to see this sort of semi-fictionalized account of events that happened in my lifetime.
Okay.
That I remember, but didn't know a ton about. And obviously there were scenes, there were some scenes with Diana and her guy, Dodi Fayed, where it was just the two of them, and literally no one could, and they're both dead, so
yeah.
Literally no one could, and there was like the night before the car crash, no one could know what actually happened, but it was certainly an interesting take on, you know, the showrunners, like, or writers' thoughts about how that evening went.
I am curious, though. Sorry. Is this something that you guys are watching together? Like, Chris, are you there for this? No. Okay.
He's not here for
she's watching.
No. Well, that's... I was curious, though, because, like, okay, so this is just something that, you know, Karen, I've heard you talk about the show before, and you've made me curious, but this was the part that I really wanted to know, like, how you were going to feel about it because of the fact that, like you said, this show is depicting things that you remember from your lifetime.
Right.
I don't feel that this is an experience that we get to have very often. So I was curious to see if that was enough to like pique Chris's interest at all, or because it's certainly piquing mine.
I'm not interested in this show. I think it's very interesting and I would love to have the time to watch it, but I simply don't. Like there's just not enough hours in the day for us to both watch this show. So she watched it on her own and I'm not interested enough, or do I have the time enough to catch up and rewatch all of it with her? So
totally fair.
But yeah, I catch glimpses of it while she's watching it sometimes, and it is a very interesting show. It's not easy to pull myself away from it, but it's just the unfortunate reality that our time is so limited.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Okay. So thank you for that. Continue, Karen. My bad.
That's okay. So yeah, I mean, they did a very interesting, I think well done job of kind of laying out the details that they do know about the accident and, you know, how it happened. And there was a lot of, like circumstance that led to it. It was like a you know, horrible confluence of events. She wasn't even supposed to be in Paris. She was supposed to go home to England. And then he decided to take her to Paris to propose to her under pressure by his father. Whether or not that actually... I mean, the show says that it happened, but also that she said no. But it was one of those private moments where it's like, we don't know what happened. And... They were trying to go out to a restaurant. There was too much paparazzi, so they ended up going to the hotel that his father owned. And that's where they had dinner and the proposal, the rejection and all that. And then they were like, well, we could stay at the hotel or go back to his apartment. And she wanted to go back to his apartment. That's why they were in the car. They like went a different way out of the hotel and everything because of all the paparazzi in the front. They were, you know, they kind of tried to take a route that they wouldn't get chased, which is why they ended up where they were. And the worst thing is, that the driver who was like supposed to drive their car, they didn't plan on going anywhere. So he had several drinks and then they were like, hey, change of plans. We're going to go. And so he was like shit faced. And that's why the crash happened. So
he didn't say anything? Like, why would you not?
Because he, you know, I don't know, his very Maybe rich boss said, let's go. Whatever. I don't know. Okay. He died too. All three people in the car died. So, I don't mean to focus on just that event, because there was a lot more to the season, but it was really well done, really interesting to see, like, how that event affected not just the kids, obviously the kids, and Charles, but, like, the whole royal family, and how their reaction to it was perceived by the public, and, you know, made the public kind of turn on the royals because they weren't quote unquote like sad enough about it and everybody loved Diana so much. And then they kind of moved on from that, and the second half was more about the Queen getting towards the end, you know, realizing that she's getting towards the end of her life and the end of her reign and thinking about what the future looks like. Also following William. A little bit Harry, but more focused on William. And see, that, the William and Harry stuff, where they stopped is what I was the most interested in.
No.
I know. They stopped. William is dating Kate Middleton, but still, like, at college. And Harry is still a young teenage fuck-up. which there was a very amusing conversation between the two brothers about, like, Harry's like, that's my job, to fuck up, to make you look good. Like, well, he's not wrong. And it was interesting to see, they drew a lot of comparisons between William and Harry, and then the Queen and her sister Margaret, who had the same sort of dynamic where, like, the Queen was, you know, she was had to be the sovereign, so she couldn't be, like, a person.
Right.
Whereas Margaret, you know, didn't have the spotlight on her, and so she just got to do whatever she wanted, but she nobody thought she was as good as her sister. And how that was very similar to the dynamic that William and Harry appeared to have, at least in the show. So I think they did a good job. I get why they ended it where they did. I just wish that there was more, and maybe someday in the future. I just would like to see this style of show talking about events that are, you know, more current, like, you know, the princes getting married, having children, Harry's split from the family, all of that stuff. What we have right now for that is just, like, a lot of documentary style stuff, which, right, you know, is interesting and also is a little bit tainted by, like, well, Harry and Meghan released their own documentary, so, like, it's their side of the story, but, you know, who actually knows? But to see, like, a more, like, you know, historical fiction type of thing, but I can't really do historical fiction on things that are happening now slash in the last 20 years.
Right.
So, someday, hopefully, I get to see that. But yeah, enjoyed The Crown. Bummed that it's over, but I feel like it ended in a decent place.
Yeah, six seasons, right?
Yeah, six seasons.
Nice.
They did a really nice extended, like, ending where they had, like, the whole last episode, the Queen was, like, planning her own funeral.
Oh,
because apparently that's a thing you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And her sister had died, and then her mother died, and those were, like, the people she was the closest to that she could, like, talk to about things. And so she didn't have anybody to talk to about all this emotional stuff that was being brought up by having to plan her own funeral. So they had her, like, talk to imaginary versions of, like, younger versions of herself, and they brought in Olivia Colman and Claire Foy, who had played the Queen in earlier seasons. So it was nice to, like, bring them back in, and they had a nice final shot of her, like, with, you know, the two of them in the background, of each over one shoulder, and it was a nice, like, summation of a life that way.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I know, like you said, there's always really good casting choices. They do, like, how was it with, like, because this was the most modern iteration, like, how was that?
Some of the, like, the looks of these people was fucking uncanny.
Nice. Okay. I was curious about that.
Particularly Elizabeth Debicki, who played Diana. It was not just her, like, you know, appearance. Obviously, she looked like her. But she must have watched so much tape of Diana and had all her, like, mannerisms, her way of speaking, just like the way she would, like, look at the camera or look at another person. Like, this is a real person that I can remember being alive and, like, remember what she looked like. And, you know, it's just insane to see an actor embody that character so well. I also thought that the kid who played, like, college-aged William was uncanny, like, looked a lot like him.
That's really cool, because I, again, this is one of those things I just find interesting is when they can do stuff like that, like with Young Rock when they were doing that. Did you see Spencer? Did you ever watch that movie?
I did not see Spencer.
Okay. No. I want to know, because now that you've been through this and you've seen this version, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that if you ever get the chance to watch that movie.
It's on my list, and I will let you know if and when I get to it.
Yeah.
I find Kristen Stewart such an interesting casting choice for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one with her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why I was curious, because I, like, don't have any other point of reference.
Just looking at a picture, like, she does, they did make her look like her.
Mm-hmm.
But, wow, I have no idea. Yeah. I need to watch more movies. I need to read more books. I need to, like, I don't know, quit my job.
I was just going to say. I have a theory for that. We just watched a YouTube video before we recorded. It started the recording tonight of a guy who has two people trapped in a room for 100 days with nothing
no,
else in the room.
We don't talk about him. From my understanding, it's a Mr. Beast.
Oh, Mr. Beast.
Yeah, I feel like Chris is not a fan.
I mean, we're okay with Mr. Beast, I think.
I'm nothing Mr. Beast.
He's not as bad as many of the other YouTubers okay. our son watches.
All right. That's yeah, okay. Just
at least
sure.
he is charitable.
Very much so. Wildly
and I
so.
Will take that over. I will take that over all these other dipshits who are just in it for inflating their own egos.
Douchebaggery. Got it.
Correct.
Well, there it is. All right, very good, Cameron. Thank you so much. Chris, you're up. Come on back.
Well, I have been watching...
Satin panties?
Shoe shopping. I've been watching The West Wing as my background show. I've been watching it for a little while now in the background. I've seen the show a handful of, I think I've watched the whole thing at least twice before. I haven't really watched anything else to talk about since we really hasn't been that long since we recorded an episode. So I figured I would talk a little bit about The West Wing and how, well, I wasn't really able to watch this show for a while because, American politics is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I've put enough space between me and what the actual reality of the world is to kind of be able to enjoy this show for its intended purpose, which I think is to be, you know, not just entertaining, but somewhat hopeful. And as long as you don't think too hard about how high fantasy this is, that the U.S. government could actually be full of people that want to govern and do right by people. It's actually pretty enjoyable to see, a fictional fantasy universe where that kind of thing could make sense and could actually function, and the kinds of troubles that they go through. But it is remarkable to watch this show and see how they react to potentially career-ending scandals that would not even be a blip on the radar of the abject horror that is the modern-day Republican Party. And it's like, wow, this character's having a baby out of wedlock, and that's like, they're holding, like, meetings and press conferences and, like, questionings, trying to figure out if that's actually true, and it's like, wow, there was a point in time where people pretended to be outraged about stuff like that, and they didn't just lower the bar, they took the bar, they ran it through a paper shredder, and then they picked up that, they took the bar and they ran it through a wood chipper. They took all that wood chipping and they burnt it, and then they pulped it, and they made that into toilet paper, wiped their asses with it, and then burnt that paper and snorted it, and that's how far, their bar is so far gone, it couldn't even possibly exist anymore. That's how far we have fallen as humans from the potential fantasy environment that is the West Wing. Like, it's unfathomable how horrid and putrid things are in reality compared to this TV show. And it's like, to think about the kinds of shit that could actually get done if anybody actually gave a shit. Like, this show takes place in a world where the president being the smartest guy in the room isn't some weird exception. It's actually expected that the president would be at least one of the smartest people in the room. And that's gone. For the president to be able to speak in complete sentences now is like an unholy, oh my God, this is so much better than it used to be. He can walk up a ramp. My God. And meanwhile, I'm watching this show where it's like, well, this guy is educated. Like, this fictional character president is properly educated, and that's not a bad thing. And it's funny because there's a whole multiple subplots about how the president coming off as an elitist for being smart is like the thing that the Republicans are fighting against him on. It's like, wow, that's adorable that there was a point in time where being legitimately smart was intimidated to these people, as opposed to like even just being ambulatory. It's astounding. And it's not like it's all about painting the Republican Party as the bad guys. And the last seasons of the show is this presidential race for who's going to replace President Bartlet. And it's like the Republican guy that he's running against is not inherently evil, because Republicans don't have to be inherently evil people. Like, it's a different point of view, and not one that I agree with, but you know what? I can live with it if necessary, but that's just not the world that we live in. It is an astonishingly charming show. It's really fun to watch, because I don't even remember what scene it was, but Karen pointed it out. Like, the guy knows how to make television. Aaron Sorkin just knows how to make good television, even if it's not based at all in reality. Nobody talks like this. Nobody acts like this, but it's still so much fun to watch.
It was a scene where somebody was bantering. I think it was Josh and Donna, and then Leo just passed through the scene for one line and was like, "Oh, for the love of God, you two." And then had nothing else to do in the scene. And like, I was like, but that's perfect. That added so much by just having John Spencer there for 5 seconds.
Yeah. And this show is full of that just kind of marvelous stuff. And it isn't without its faults. Like, Ainsley Hayes just disappeared. She was a real character on that show for like, I don't know, a season. And then they just stopped mentioning her. She was just gone. And nobody knows what happened or why. Just this, well, I'm done with this character. I don't know what else to do with her. So, poof. She's gone. And Aaron Sorkin traditionally has trouble with women. It seems like, especially in this show, the women characters exist to prop up the powerful men. It's not always like that. CJ is a great character. But you know, for the most part, the most interesting women seem to exist purely as like assistants to the big, strong, powerful men. And it is what it is, and it's not entirely unrealistic, because there's a whole lot of misogyny in the world, and nothing breaks through the power structure quite like a white dude. It's But that's the thing. Everybody is so entertaining, and everybody on the show, all the characters, the main characters in the show, their purposes are to do right by the world, to do the job that they've been entrusted with, that there's reverence for the office of the president, and that the office is worthy of respect. And, you know, that's what we grew up with, like, as kids, like, that's what we were taught. The reality of it is that, you know, the creatures that hold these offices are not, no one has anyone's best interest in heart except for clutching onto power and just doing what they can to make sure that their names are as pretty as possible in the history books, which is frankly fucking disgusting. But this is a very entertaining show that I'm having a good time watching, and I don't get too angry about it because I don't think about it a whole lot beyond it, you know? Like, right now, I mean, falling into the darkness hole of just how horrible, horrible, horrible everyone in politics is. This is probably the deepest I've gone down that rabbit hole. I usually just finish watching the show and think to myself, boy, wouldn't that be something? And then I move on with my day.
The fact that you called it high fantasy at the beginning of your explanation speaks volumes.
One might even say contemporary fantasy.
I have a quick story time to add to that, which is story like time. A long, long time ago when Chris and I were first dating. We had gone on vacation with his family, and one day we went by the cabin where his parents were staying to, you know, just see what was going on, and his dad was there, and he said, hey, Dad, how's it going? And his dad started out saying, like, oh, it's going pretty good, and then went on a 10-minute rant where, by the end of it, it was the end of the world. And Chris just came out of that conversation, and he was so bewildered. And he said to me, like, I don't really know how that happened. And I don't know what, you know, what's going on with my dad. And, like, here we are. And and now you get it.
Well, I mean, I think the difference is that conversation started out with his unyielding rage toward the concept of selecticized paper towels.
Oh, my God. That's wait a right. Second.
Did you say unyielding rage against selecticized paper towels?
Yeah, that's yeah. Amazing. And he was able to logically, at least as far as I could tell, connect his rage about selecticized paper towels to the end of the world.
It tracks. I get it. I understand.
And, you know, he just was like, why would you want to have a paper towel? Like, I don't know, Dad. Sometimes you want to have...
I can think of lots of times where I'd want half a paper towel, but you know what? My dad is a very smart, very angry person, and he's fascinated to listen to sometimes. And other times, you just listen to him and go, you need to smoke less weed, sir. But, you know, I hope to not become him, but I feel that it is inevitable in a lot of ways. But fortunately, I have Karen to, you know, force me to get out of the house from time to time. And, you know, I do podcasts and talk to people, and my job doesn't make me miserable. So
I didn't you do mean podcasts? To say you're turning into him. It just sounded a little bit like him. That's oh,
there's
all.
The DNA is definitely there. That's not lost on me. good times.
That
The West Wing's a great show.
A really long-running show, too. I didn't realize it was just 155 episodes. That's a good long time for him, for Sorkin. Usually his are a little bit shorter than that.
I think that was his longest-running show, and by the end of it, he was, like, running, like, weeks and millions of dollars over budget and over deadline, but...
The show was pretty successful and very
exactly.
popular.
And it also, you know, network.
Yeah.
Right.
And network shows tend to go on as long as they possibly can.
And it told some really good stories. I just got to an episode now where, you know, a character had disappeared again, unceremoniously. One of my favorite characters on the show, Danny Kincannon, just fucking vanished. He just wasn't there anymore. And then in one episode, they mentioned his name. It's like, yeah, I remember that character. He was kind of a big deal. And then he showed up in the next episode. I was like, yay, Danny's back. Because I know how it ends with him. And in fact, there's a really fun episode that's like kind of a mind fuck of Studio 60. Because the actor who played Danny also played, I forget the character's name, but he plays like the producer of... the producer? Yeah, I think it's the producer's the job. He's like the main guy in the room... calling the shots and stuff, not the director, but you know, he's like one of the main guys running the show while it's live.
Okay.
Right. And so they had his character and CJ
Allison Janney's
character CJ have a romance in the West Wing, which is wonderful. So there's an episode of Studio 60 where Allison Janney is the guest on the fictional Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip show. And there's like some pretty interesting moments between her and him where he mentions her career as playing on the West Wing. And it's like, but you were on the West Wing too, but you weren't on the West. Like you, the real person, were on the West Wing and involved with this. So they made sure there was plenty of scenes between him and her which was clearly a like fan service thing for people who liked those two characters, but it's this weird mind trip of like, wait, so Alice and Janney exists. Does that mean that you also exist in this world? I'm so confused. But it's a good time.
Very good. Very good.
I've also taken to his, because in the beginning of the series, he's on the show a lot. And his response to absurd things is to just say, okay. And I've just kind of like taken.
Okay, so now I know who you're talking
just
about.
Naturally. It's just naturally come up so many times in my life where that's just the appropriate response, especially when talking to my daughter.
Oh my God.
And like, okay. I can't think of a better response than, okay.
And you have to say it that way.
And now that you say it out loud, I'm like, oh my God, he has been doing that with her.
It's because there's nothing else to say. It's just like, hey, here's some words. I don't care what you're talking about, but here's the words that are coming out of my mouth. Okay. You've said those words now.
Oh,
I have acknowledged
hysterical.
That you said them. And now we're all going to move on.
So,
she's
Chris,
doing
would
this
you
wonderful
vote
thing
for The Rock?
Is... No, go ahead. What's that?
I said, would you vote for The Rock?
Probably not.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on who he's up against.
Just wondering. Okay. What's your kid been
Stone
doing?
Stone Cold Steve Austin?
Oh man, if he was up against Stone Cold Steve Austin, sure, I'd vote for The Rock. Well, Rock's like, a bit of, you know, Senor Johnson is a bit of an arrogant son of a bitch, but, you know, I guess you kind of have to be president of the United States.
Look, I'm just putting it out there that there could be an option in the future, and in, like, the not-too-distant future, that...
Never gonna happen.
So, listen, according to him, the people have spoken, and The Rock is what they want.
And he knows what the... Yeah, people know it. Yeah, sure. Okay.
Anyway, moving
Anywho.
On.
All right, I'm going to wrap this up with what I've been watching this week. And both the missus and myself, we sat down to watch the beginning of season 2 of the human walking building that is Reacher. My God, the man is gigantic. Jack Reacher's back, season 2. It's great. It's more of what... I loved about the first season. We're getting a little bit more with him and his crew of like his team from when he was in the military, the special investigators. It's a little bit deeper of a mystery because a lot of people that are he's attached to are dying, as opposed to just the one, like it was his brother, if I'm not mistaken, in the first season. But he is doing his Jack Reacher shtick, man, going around kicking ass and taking names kind of thing. And Alan Richardson is perfectly cast for this part. The supporting cast is really, really doing a knockout job as well. Like, and it's a completely different cast, except for, so in, there was a couple of episodes where his cohort from back in the military days, Francis, she is in this season as well. And then someone, we know who the big bad is picking off their team members one by one. We don't really know why yet. We're only a couple of episodes in, but we know the what's going on. What I found very funny, and it was so in passing. Robert Patrick plays Shane Lance Langston, and we are assuming like he is being portrayed as the big bad. And Robert Patrick, he was, you know, the father in what was that? The show, the.
You can do it, babe.
No, because Stone Cold Steve Austin is now stuck in my head, and it's not him. Anywho, Robert Patrick played one of the Terminators, and
right.
In this show, they are hunting down Jack Reacher and one of his military cohorts, and they check in to a hotel under aliases, and like it's a real quick kind of in passing, they say he's checked in under a name and she's checked in under Sarah Connor. And they go, well, I know who that is. Like, he's checked in. That's his alias. And then the guy on the phone goes, well, who's Sarah Connor? He goes, I don't give a shit. And then they move on. Like,
it was such a great little nod. It was cute.
Like, hey, we know you did other things before this and you're doing a good job now. Thank you for that. It's exactly what it's supposed to be. He is Jack Reacher. The man can solve any problem with a headbutt. It's fantastic. And it's making me want to start reading or at least listening to the books. I didn't realize how many books there were. We're talking like nearly 30 books about Jack Reacher. And all of them, he is a mountain of a human being, not Tom Cruise. So, like, it's shocking, like, because I saw a description of the Reacher character from the books, and I don't understand how they turned that into itty bitty Tom Cruise, but they did, and
he did it. I guess Tom Cruise has enough pull in that town to, you know, do whatever the hell he wants.
It's true. It's true.
Driving me crazy right now is I can't think of Robert Patrick's name on the X-Files.
On the X-Files. Wow.
He was in like the very last season, I want to say.
Okay.
Ooh, okay.
I don't know. I'm not fluent in X-File.
I haven't. How dare you? My rewatch never went that far. I don't remember.
I mean, I can't think of... I want to say...
John Doggett, that was his name.
Okay. I'm trying to think if I've watched any actual episodes. I know I've seen the movie.
This was like post Mulder and Scully. Like, they both left the show. And it was him and then this dark-haired woman who's... I think her character's name was Monica. I can't remember, but... Yes, Monica Reyes, played by Annabeth Gish. It was the two of them. And it was like, why are we still doing this show? Like, the magic of Mulder and Scully is gone. But that doesn't have anything to do with your show, so I'm going to shut up now.
Appreciate you giving me a little backstory with him. But it's great. We're enjoying the hell out of it. I mean, we're doing that thing where we look ahead to see how many episodes are available, and then we go, shit, we need to leave one more before we're out so that we don't watch the last one and go, shit, there's nothing left. So we...
Oh, these are Lee Child books. Yeah, that guy writes like a crap ton of books and people...
28. I saw there was at least 28 audiobooks all in, and that's not counting shorts that are in the... I'm assuming the Jack Reacher universe. So lots of stories to pull from, and they keep pulling from the book. So they have plenty of source material to go from, and they're doing a great job. The stories move along really well. The acting is top. Like, they're doing a good job for, you know, when you look at a guy like Alan, he comes off as just a big mook looking kind of guy, and he's doing he's acting his ass off. He's doing a really good job.
They're leaning in heavy to like more emotional stuff with him this season too, because they keep kind of like, they're like, well, if you were settled this or that, like they keep kind of, I don't know. They're not even subtle about it, but they're just like pointing out all of these things about how his lifestyle has isolated him, not only from society, but like from his team and these big moments in their lives. And there have been a number of pointed moments where they're like, oh, this thing happened. And he's like, well, why didn't I get an invitation? And it's like, well, would you have come? Probably not. Well, there you go. So, you didn't have an address, and also you wouldn't have shown up.
The way, so something goes down, and the way Francis contacts him, because he does not have a phone, or he changed his, like he got a new phone, or she couldn't get a hold of him via normal methods. She actually deposited $110 into his checking account, and then $1,030 in a separate transaction so that he knew to call, because their platoon was the 110th, and 1030 means emergency, reach out. So that's how they were able to get a hold of him. Throughout the first, at least the first two episodes, they keep looking for other members of the team, and most of them are incommunicado, like can't find them. Every place that they go, their houses are tore up, their offices are turned upside down. But there's this team photo. Everybody has this team photo, and he makes a point to say, does everybody have this photo except me? He's like, where would you have hung it? Like, he literally buys used clothes every place that he like stops at. And he's explaining like, well, I'll either stay at a hotel. If I can't find a hotel, I'll sleep in the back of a truck. I once slept a very comfortable night in a hammock in the backyard of this guy. Like, he just is a drifter. And he's carrying this show story wise. So, can't wait for more of them to come out. I think the fourth episode just hit. So
nice.
More to watch. So, and I really like Alan. I think he's a great, great actor. I remember him back in the day of playing the original Aquaman in Smallville.
Has he improved, honey?
You have to. You can only go up from Smallville. It was adorable. I mean,
I don't know.
Arthur Curry.
He seemed dreamy.
Or AC. His friends call him AC. And he wore orange sleeveless shirt and green shorts.
God, Evan made me watch a scene that he was in on that show. And I was like, why? Why?
Because it's odd. Like, he's definitely aged. But this wholeness has just swole. Like, he just got tremendously bigger. Even though back in the day, he was a big boy. My favorite part about this show is the imagery for season two. It says Reacher's back, and it's just a picture of him facing away from camera. It's almost as if it's printed on like a t-shirt on his back, but the man is tremendous.
I think Evan has a little bit of a man crush.
I have a man crush.
Because he's like, babe, what do you think of that V? And I was like,
What?
And he's like, you know, like the shape of his shoulders and stuff like that. Like, what do you think of that? And
no, I was like, because you were so I'm not going to lie. Yes, there is a crush. But you are very picky when it comes to the human structure. Yes. Like, once it gets too big, it gets gross. Or like, you know, you've made comments about wrestlers.
I have opinions. That's yes.
She said. So.
It is what I said.
Watch it. It's enjoyable. I think that's it. Anybody else got anything else?
Break time.
Nope. Cool. Let's get. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Foundation. Stay tuned.
Hi, everyone. Chris here. Podcast listening is free, but podcast creation is not. That's why the Geekade Patreon exists. In an effort to help us pay the bills, we've got a Patreon page set up where you can gain access to our monthly podcast topic schedule, get early access to many of our shows, and more. If you'd like to help support Geekade and keep these shows running week after week, head over to the Geekade Patreon page, linked in the show notes of this very podcast.
We are Safe at Home, the leading dog rescue in the heart of New Jersey. Are you searching for a loyal companion, a dog that will bring love and joy to your home? Look no further than Safe at Home. At Safe at Home, we believe in giving every dog a second chance. We rescue, rehabilitate, and find loving forever homes for dogs in need, right here in the Garden State. Our dogs are ready to make a lasting impact on your life. Each one has a unique story, a wagging tail, and an incredible capacity for love. When you adopt from Safe at Home, you're not just gaining a pet, you're becoming a part of our family. Our dedicated team ensures a seamless adoption process, providing ongoing support and guidance. With New Jersey's beautiful parks, beaches, and trails, you and your new furry friend will have endless opportunities for adventures and cherished memories. Safe at Home relies on the support of compassionate individuals like you. Your donations and volunteer work enable us to continue saving lives and finding forever homes for these amazing dogs. Join us in creating a safer, happier community for dogs in New Jersey. Together we can make a difference and give every dog the chance to feel safe at home. Visit our website or call us now to learn about how you can be a part of the Safe at Home mission. Safe at Home, because every dog deserves to be loved and protected. www.safeathomerescue.org.
And we're back. Thank you so much for checking out the commercials. Time to talk about this week's main topic, Foundation Season 1, Episode 1, The Emperor's Peace. Okay, so this show came to my attention because of another series or a YouTube show that I watch called Corridor Crew. They do VFX artists react. And they spent a good half hour on this show alone because of the amazing special effects that are done in this show for, you know, a series. This is a sci-fi drama. It airs on Apple TV, and the elevator pitch that, you know, you could find on IMDb is a complex saga of humans scattered on planets throughout the galaxy, all living under the rule of the Galactic Empire. So, space drama. With that being said, as I was watching this first episode, the way they present the world is fantastic. The planets are set up, it's, you know, similar to just about every other space drama that you've seen. You know, there's the ruling class that's in the middle, and then the outliers, and the further away they get from the center, it's more, let's call it rural. And the first episode, we are introduced to, let's talk about Gail first. Gail is a young lady who is on a planet called, I can't remember the name of the planet. I want to say Stalic.
It was Synax.
Synax, yeah.
I don't know why I remembered that.
Good job. Appreciate it. Where, like, if you are smart, you're a witch. Pretty much. It's a very religion-based planet. And this girl is gifted. She's very, very intelligent, especially in the world of mathematics. Now there is another character, Harry, who is a
wizard.
Yes, he's a wizard.
He's a psychohistorian.
So he's really, really good at math too, and he has come up with this, I get his process, to sort of tell the future by math. Now, it's just probability, working things out, seeing, and it's, you know, the future of large groups and whatnot, and in a long enough timeline, he could figure this stuff out. With that being said, the ruling class, which is Brother Dawn, Brother Day, Brother Dusk, I want to say that's how it was presented. It's a young boy, a middle-aged man, and an older man, but they are clones of each other. And they are the emperors. The Brother Day is it seems that they were presenting him as the big man on campus. He was in charge, and his character is played by Lee Pace. And I was watching this, the man, he presents very well, and I'm like, I know who this guy is, and I couldn't put my finger on it for just about the entirety of the show. My wife had a very unique reaction to when he stood up and presented himself, and I'm like, that's interesting. He was also in he played in the Guardians of the Galaxy, so that's where I remembered him from. But he plays crazy leader very, very well.
Mildly insulted that you didn't remember him from elsewhere before that.
You know what? So Pushing Daisies was a great show and I enjoyed it, but I haven't seen it in so long that it's not on the forefront of my memory.
How is that not the only thing you think about all day, every day?
Sorry. So the character of Harry, just he has seen into the future using math, and he tells the ruling class that the empire is going to fall in about 500 years, which, I mean, it makes sense. They are not too pleased to hear that. They are pretty much put him on trial to kill him. They figure out that the best way to smooth this over is to bring in Gale, because he could explain how he knows this information to another person of his intellect when it comes to math, and nobody else is of his intellect except for this young lady, Gale, who pretty much won a contest by answering a math equation. So they bring her in. She reads, she sees the math. She said, yeah, this is going to happen. So they are tried and they are punished. And pretty much the punishment is exile, because as opposed to killing him, he says, this end is going to happen, but I can't stop it, but we can make it a little bit easier and help the dark times be shorter. And his plan is to pretty much build galaxy libraries so that not all knowledge is lost in the fall of the empire. So the reason I started watching,
and that's called The Foundation.
The Foundation.
Which, when they said that, I was like, everybody drink.
Okay.
The name
okay.
of the show.
But let us not ever forget an Encyclopedia Galactica, because I laughed out loud when they said that, especially with the level of
serious.
Oh my goodness. I was like, no, this. Okay. Yep. They're doing it.
I mean, Jared Harris he has a delivery. Like, he pretty much is the same guy in all of his performances, but he has this weird sort of delivery. I believed it. I think it's a good plan. But
I probably would have laughed had I been not struggling to stay conscious.
So, did not enjoy?
The word dull does not begin to describe it.
Interesting.
There was an action sequence where a bunch of stuff blew up, and I don't think I'd ever been more bored in my life.
Wow.
I'm reminded of a line from Mystery Science Theater where it says, if you can look bored and speak haltingly, you're in. And he was talking about a fucking Roger Corman movie. But anyway, go on.
Wow, so that scene that you're talking about is the fall of the space elevator, and it literally blows up because of terrorism. And
terrorism.
The
wrist bombs.
The length of a tower that goes from the Earth into space breaks off at the spaceport and literally falls to Earth and wraps around it and pretty much he said it garroted the world.
Yep.
Now, to me, that was an amazing special effect that was phenomenal. The fact that you were bored by it was it. That's very interesting to me.
It was pretty, but the show did nothing to convince me to give a single shit about it.
Okay.
Like, it was neat to look at, but I felt nothing for anyone at any point other than, I don't know what's going on, and this show doesn't seem to be all that interested in telling me, other than, you know, just saying a bunch of things. Like, things are happening, but nothing's happening? Like,
okay.
Sure. Right. It's got a little cube thing. It can show stuff, and there's some kids, and there's a floaty thing, and there's a shield, but then there's this other lady, and she's smart and won a math contest. And so this other guy wants to talk to her for some reason, but now he's on trial. And there's this guy that's actually three guys, and one's a kid and one's an old guy. And that's a thing, I guess. I hated this. I hated this show so much. And I would have been so much angrier had I not been asleep.
Oh, damn.
Well, I'm glad you gave it a chance. Because all of that stuff was explained. But that's fine.
It wasn't explained in a way that was in any way entertaining. It was just like, here are things that are happening. You're watching science fiction. Do you like math?
Like, okay.
Tell a story. Throw a pie. Do something. And then they blew up a bunch of stuff. And it's like, this show's very pretty, but I can't. Okay. I can't. It's so aggressively dull. I was... Sorry.
Okay. Go on. All right. Karen, how did you feel about it?
I didn't love it either. I didn't feel as strongly negative as Chris did. It made a lot of sense to me that you came to it through a special effects podcast, because mm-hmm. it does look very good.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I remember that shot in the very beginning with the planet, where you could see the planet rotating, and I was taken aback by the detail of it. Like, you know, having watched a bajillion hours of Star Wars, you know, you see floaty orbs of planets all the time, but like, man, you could see the clouds like really rotating at a separate speed as the rest of the planet. Like, mm-hmm. visually speaking, it was very, I have no notes about the visual effects, none at all whatsoever. And like, it started and I was like, okay, let's do this thing. And then it just continued to lose me, but almost like it just kept looking at me like, no, you're going to care about this because I said you should care about it. I'm not going to explain why you should care about it, and I'm not going to do anything with these characters other than just talk, but you're going to care about it because I'm smarter than you. And the whole thing just struck me as like, wow, this was adapted from some very thick books, I have to imagine.
Yeah. Yes, it was from Asimov novels. So,
this is Asimov. Okay. See, if I had known that going in, I probably would have changed my expectations. All right.
I mean,
this is Isaac Asimov. All right.
And it's rewritten by David Goyer. So, I mean, I shouldn't say rewritten. It's made, I guess, written for television by David Goyer.
Adapted.
So. Yes, very heady information. I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of surprised with the visuals that were presented, and the fact that this was Galactic Empire versus a rebellion of people that you were not mildly interested in it.
Because there's no fun at all.
Okay.
I like at least like a smidgen of fun. Somebody did crack a smile or maybe tell a joke. It was no fun. It was okay.
It was a drama. So, but I get it. Okay.
Well, so is the fucking West Wing. But every now and then somebody will say something mildly amusing. Like there has to be something somewhere, some even the briefest moment of levity. And there was just. With the exception of like the girl offering to like let the other kid feel him up at the beginning, there was like nothing even vaguely related to levity in this. It was just very serious all the time. We are a very serious conversations about serious space encyclopedias.
It is a show about math, so
it's a, well, it's a show about math anyway. And the ending of civilization as they know it. So
some lighthearted stuff.
I was very tired when we were watching it, so I'm sure that didn't help, and I'm sure I'm being unfair to it. But I did not go in like angry. I didn't go in with a chip on my shoulder. It started up, and I was like. All right, maybe I did go with a slight chip in my shoulder because I read the description first and was just like, the evil empire is about to get an awakening, like nothing it's ever seen before. And I'm like, oh, okay, I've heard this story before. But, you know, I tried to go in open-minded and then it was just so aggressively dull. It's like it was really proud of how dull it was, and it's just it was so very not for me.
Okay.
I found the premise interesting. I was wondering whether this episode might have been, you know, had pilot's disease. Because I'm looking at, you know, the bona fides of it being an Asimov story, of it coming from Apple TV. of it having Jared Harris and Lee Payson, and I'm like, these people don't work on crap. Like, no, no. I wonder whether it just had a tough time getting going based on, you know, the source material, the density of the source material.
I did read some stuff that said that they took some liberties with, like, the story,
Even if they took the most of liberties, it's still Asimov. Like, Asimov is dense writing. And, like, it is so iRobot, that was an Asimov tale. Oh, Christ. Like, I could have sworn it was Bicentennial Man. Like, his stuff is heavy. And I knew it was a drama going into it. Like, I did not expect I didn't expect levity at all, because I was aware of where it was coming from. You sat there the entire time with me. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, actually, okay. It's kind of interesting, because one of the things that Chris is saying is, like, there was no levity, like, there was nothing drawing him into it, which it's just an odd contrast in, like, how stuff hits us sometimes as, like, individuals in a group, because I didn't go into this with very high expectations, and I was just kind of expecting some, like, ooh, that was pretty. And then when the elevator-y thing came down, I had, like, genuine feelings of anxiety watching that come down, just understanding the massive structure that was falling onto this world of completely unsuspecting people who had, you know, virtually no warning and no time to prepare for something like this. And for me, I did understand some of the, like, you know, some of it is like, you're going to care about this because we're telling you to. And I guess I'm just a good listener, because I was like, yeah, okay, I care. Tell me more. But I was really, I don't know, like, I guess maybe it's because of the fact that I have watched more stuff that lacks levity, that and sometimes doesn't have a sense of humor, and, like, I just wasn't...
I'm not saying it needs to be funny or that it needs to have a sense of humor, but there needs to be something that makes me root for these people. When I say levity, I don't mean somebody needs to be quippy or cracking a joke or something.
No, but just having...
I mean...
Go ahead.
What possible thing could any of these people be fighting for, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's miserable. There's no happiness, there's no joy in any facet of any character's life. So what are they fighting for? What is the goal here? What is it that I should be rooting for them to accomplish, other than to continue their miserable lives as is? Like, to not get killed, I guess. Like, it didn't seem like there was anything in there. It seemed like the entire value of the storytelling was the cleverness of the storytelling, and not any sort of heart behind the storytelling. There was no reason for me to root for anybody, because everyone was just, well, this sucks and that sucks, but I guess it could suck worse. And, like, I guess it could suck worse is not really the best motivator for me to care about how evil the king is. Like, with this, the king dude disintegrated that painter guy because he read a book or something. I was like, okay, I get it. He's a complete asshole. Like, is somebody going to kill all three of this guy at some point? I guess that would be interesting to watch, but I don't like the good guy. Like, that painter dude that he liquefied was, like, my favorite guy on the show.
Yeah.
All right, I dig this dude. Can we have more of this guy? No, he's a puddle now. Well, shit.
So, and it's,
I guess it's back to all these other people.
What's interesting is that you're seeing it that way, and when I'm first introduced to Gail as a character, like, she is living in a situation that is dire, because she is going to be killed because of being intelligent in that world. she was getting out. There was like that glimmer of hope, which turned into something else, but there was hopefulness for this girl. And then,
but I think his point is like, she was on a world that didn't look super thrilling, and you know, like, mm-hmm. like she was an outcast from her people. And then, you know, so like, again, I understand Chris's point. That's what I was trying to say is like, I just meant like, there weren't a lot of world building moments that made you go like, oh, this place seems pleasant. Like, so I can see why you would feel that way, Chris. My point was more so like, I'm wondering if this was to establish like, this is a very high stakes situation. And like Karen was saying to that point, like maybe there is a little bit of the pilot syndrome.
Sure.
Pilot's disease. Yeah. Like I could see that where maybe that could have also happened a little bit. But I was like, okay, if they want to fight for this, like, I want to know more. Like, why are they fighting if everything does seem so dire? So for me, that's kind of what my takeaway was. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess I could see why you wouldn't necessarily be thrilled about it either. Because
I was very tired when I watched it, so I probably wasn't in the right headspace to give it a proper chance. Mm. All I know is that I felt I just was taken aback by how unbelievably dull it all was.
Mm.
And I didn't want it to be, and that kind of made me mad, because I love good science fiction. I really do. Clearly. But this one was just such a huge whiff for me. And, Yeah.
It happens. You can't like them
all. It does. And thank God for that. If I did, I'd never get through even the few shows that I can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, I enjoyed the hell out of this. I liked the I don't want to say dreariness. Like, I liked the visuals of it. The visuals kept me going. Hopefulness is not the proper word to use, but I can't think of another one. The hopefulness at the end where like, this was the plan and we are going to do something for our futures. It may not be our future, but the future of those that we care about, that, you know, will come well past us. Like, 'cause anything that is happening in this episode or that plan is not going to affect them per se. It's for the future kind of thing. So
I was a little perplexed by the timeline of the story. Like, I get that there, I guess what I didn't understand was like the lifespan of these people.
I actually had the same question, Karen.
Cause they're talking about like, you know, this is going to last for 500 years or it's going to last for 30,000 years. And I'm like, okay, but how is this your problem? Like, I get your, you know, whatever, for the good of your species, your race, whatever. But, like, how are you going to tell this story if the characters, like, are not going to live to see the end of what they're working towards? Like, I was a little confused where they were going with that.
So my takeaway from that is that those that were trying to stop the mathematicians were fighting for the line of the emperor. The emperor, every time they clone, they just pass it. Like he said, it's a repeat of the same thing over and over and over and over again. And it has been that way for a very long time. So them talking about 5,000, 500, 1,000, 15,000, like, that's just the theory in this world, is that the guys that are in charge now will be in charge, then it'll just be newer copies.
Yeah, but I think the question still stands, though, is like, what is the lifespan of the average person? I was curious to know if there's an answer to that, and I did not feel that it was explained in that episode. Maybe it'll come in a future episode, and I'm curious to know.
Presumably that lady that was, you know, could touch the the vault thing, that's the older version of Gail.
That was a different character.
That's a different character, Steve. This was confusing to me, and I'm like, but they're on the same that vault is on the planet where
they were exiled to.
Yes, and that was the thing.
And I guess there was too much like setup and exposition and world building to do in this episode to really lay out how they're going to connect, like whatever this time in the future where there's that vault thing with what Harry and Gale are doing. Because it didn't seem to be much connection other than it having happened on the same planet. But I guess if I were to keep watching that they would make that connection clearer.
And what's funny is my gut, when I saw that, my gut told me that that vault was their creation and that there's something stopping people from getting to it to protect it.
Yeah.
Because it was only a 35-year gap between the Harry Math story and the Outer Planet Touchy the Vault story. So I feel that that's my guess. I'm definitely going to watch more of this and see where it goes because I'm genuinely intrigued.
I would keep going with this too.
So
yeah, and also like the other thing was that I did after we watched it, like I did my usual like let me just do a little digging, and it seems like this is going to be kind of similar. I'm getting a vibe that this is going to be similar to some of the stuff they were doing with House of the Dragon in the Game of Thrones universe, where they had like a lot of time jumps and some of them were more long gaps than others. I feel like this one is going to be one that might play with like jumping around through time as part of the storytelling.
My understanding is that it will, but the main storyline is the current, you know, where Harry and Gale are figuring stuff out.
Okay.
I do, from my understanding, is we will see an older version of Dawn that will be Lee Pace again.
That's amazing.
So I think I'm just curious to see where that goes. So there we go. It isn't for everyone. I really thought that you would, I picked this, Chris, thinking that the space operatic situation that it was would be intriguing to you and you would enjoy it more. So I apologize for you not being on board and liking it. So,
oh, no need to apologize for my shitty taste in TV shows.
But that's the thing. You don't.
I don't. And like, I honestly think this is probably more of a headspace thing than anything else, but. It is what it is.
Yeah. So, all right. With that. Oh, so whose turn is it? Because I'm going to pass this to Chris to do the spiel. Chris is going to give it back to me, and then I'm going to give it back to Chris, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Ready? Hey, Chris, you got a spiel for us?
No.
Okay. Hey.
This week's episode is not filmed before a live studio audience, but it is fueled by feedback from listeners like you. And you can get in touch with us in a multitude of ways. We have an official Geekade Discord, where there's an entire This Week's Episode channel dedicated to all things TV talk, and of course, the regular Geekade social media accounts linked to in the show notes. The four of us can be found in various ways. I'm not on Twitter anymore, really, but you can read my work at StoneAgeGamer.com and in the pages of Nintendo Force Magazine. Karen, where can people find you?
They can find me at STM Stitches on Facebook, Instagram, Etsy, and TikTok.
Angie, where can people find you?
My stuff is all connected to my website, so go there. It is angelafernot.com.
And Evan, what about you?
I'm going to tell people to go to talesofcapefear.com as well as Angie's website, because I am in the process of doing new stuff and new products there. So take a look. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
I hope it's t-shirts with your face on.
There may be some of those.
If you need to know more about the shows we discussed tonight or what we'll be watching in the future, have a look at our show notes. And if you have any other questions at all, we can always be reached at mail@geekade.com. Just include the words "this week's episode" in the subject line so we know who you're trying to reach. This show is available anywhere fine podcasts are sold, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and more. And wherever you decide to listen, please like, comment, subscribe, and leave reviews, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. Again, as always, keep your eyes on Geekade for more fresh original content. Back to you, Evan.
Hey, Chris, it's your turn.
Back to me, Evan.
What's our homework?
Well, I have been hearing a lot of very mixed reviews about this thing, and I'm very curious about it. So our homework is going to be Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, Season 1, Episode 1, Aftermath. Which Monarch. Is especially funny because it's after a show that was about math.
Get it? Oh, dear God.
So,
yeah, I don't know. It's got Kurt Russell and his kid. And his kid is playing young Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
How clever is that?
It's good times to be had by all.
It's a show.
Yeah, have you guys watched it at all yet? Or?
Yeah.
Remember,
yeah.
I spoke about this, I don't know, the last time, I think. And it was...
Oh, right. All right, okay.
I did not know that Kurt Russell's son was playing a young
right.
version of Kurt Russell.
I remember that conversation.
Because I didn't know which Captain America's real name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There it is.
that actually just clicked for me.
So. Store brand Captain America. That just what? Sorry,
I said that actually just clicked for me. So I still hadn't figured that out.
Oh yeah.
Good time.
Well, there it is. You have your homework. We've spoken about TV for long enough. From all of us here at this week's episode, I'm Evan.
I'm Angie.
I'm Karen.
I hope you like math.
Good night.
Happy holidays.
Oh, that's right.
Happy and happy
Merry
New
Christmas.
Year.
Yay.
And this concludes our broadcast day.